He was drafted in 1981 by the Winnipeg Jets. The following year, in 1982, he was drafted by the California Angels in MLB. He was a finalist for the Hobey Baker Award in hockey before he actually played a year in the AHL before he had decided that he was going to try his hand at baseball. Turned out to be a pretty good decision. He was inducted into the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame back in 2003. Kirk McCaskill joins us. Kirk, how you doing?
Good, Jason. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
I'm pumped that you're coming on, man. This is outstanding. Like, so in story time, we always like to talk about, obviously you're playing baseball and hockey, growing up, in Ontario. Now, cause your father had, played pro hockey, did he not? So you kind of bounced around a little bit as a kid playing, living in a lot of different places.
Yeah, you're right. My dad played, about 21 years of professional hockey. In those 21, he played four games in the National Hockey League. So he was a career minor leaguer. And so we did bounce around a lot from, was born in Kapuskasing, Ontario. And then, he went down to the Eastern League to play for the Nashville Dixie Flyers. And then he went to Vancouver when they were in the Western League before they got to the NHL. And then he went to Phoenix, still in the Western League. And then he got an opportunity in the WHA with the Los Angeles Sharks. And then he kept going. I mean, he played in the North American Hockey League for a couple of years, and I think he hung up his skates at around 38 or 39. So we did bounce around quite a bit, and hockey was my first love, but I played all different sports, and including a lot of baseball when I was a kid.
Well, man, that's outstanding, and we see it now that I think sometimes, you know, one sport athletes, it's not the best choice, and you'd be a perfect example of that, Kirk. So how did you feel like when you played as a kid, when you were playing hockey, what position were you? And then were you always a pitcher in baseball? I'm assuming you must have been a position guy as well.
Yeah, I was. I played everything in green youth baseball, and even in college, I hit. I didn't play a position, so I pitched and I DH'd. But yeah, I played, not just those two sports. I played a lot of tennis, and I tried to play, as many sports as I could. I was just sort of in my DNA. I love sports and played, basketball. But in the end, we were living in California, and I had an opportunity to go to a boarding school, prep school in New York, to continue to play hockey. I mean, there wasn't a ton of ice out here in Southern California back in the 70s. So I went to boarding school in New York, and then ended up getting a scholarship, hockey scholarship to the University of Vermont, and played both sports there as well.
You know, it's a mate. Now, is that the reason why you chose Vermont, because they would allow you to play both?
Well, I was assuming I could play both. I didn't have that discussion necessarily with the other coaches that were recruiting me, because at the time, I mean, honestly, I wasn't sure I had any sort of future in baseball at that prep school. I mean, it was in New York, and we played 12 games in the spring, and that was about it. So I was unscouted coming out of high school, and it wasn't until my summer after my senior year in Phoenix, Arizona, that some of the scouts started to come out. And that was the first time, when I'm 18 years old, that I thought, wow, maybe I could play in college. I didn't even think about playing professionally. So it worked out. The University of Vermont had a great baseball coach in Jack Leggett, who went on to be, he's a Hall of Fame coach, collegiate coach. He went on to coach Clemson for 28 years. And so I was very fortunate to have, two great coaches in college who did encourage me to do both.
Kirk McCaskill joins us. And so, Kirk, while you're at University of Vermont, you got drafted by the Jets in 1981, and then you got drafted the next year by a California dude. Like, you're a young guy. You're 20 years of age. You get drafted to the NHL, and you stayed at University of Vermont. Then you're a Hobey Baker finalist, So it wasn't like you were just one of those, kind of on the fringe. Like, you're a really good player in hockey. Why ultimately were you a better baseball player, do you think, than a hockey player?
That's a good question. I think I lacked a lot of the essentials to be a good hockey player. I wasn't very fast. In college, I was a pretty good player, and I could score goals. But once I got to the pro level, a lack of speed really hurt my game. And in baseball, you know, I actually signed with the Angels after my junior season at Vermont and returned to continue playing hockey my senior year. So I was very intent on playing playing both sports as long as I could. And in the end, I was just I had a few more pluses in my game on the mound than I did versus being on the ice.
Kirk McCaskill joins us, of course. He's in Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame, drafted by the Jets in 91, and then drafted by the California Angels in 1992. And he actually played a year in the American League with the Jets farm team, the Sherbrooke Jets, in the American Hockey League in 83-84. So you obviously wanted to give it a run. Tell me about that year in the AHL with the Jets.
Well, we didn't have that great of a year, and I personally didn't have a very good year, and I had thoughts of returning to the Angels, about halfway through, and so I started to actually started playing catch with Brian Hayward, the goalie, and Brian Hazy and I would throw the ball around in the winter months and stuff up indoors, and I went back to spring training the following year, and once again I saw that I had, you know, a future in baseball, whereas the struggles I had in the American League, you know, weren't leading me to believe I could be an NHL player. So
when you're playing catch with Brian Hayward, now you're a pitcher, were you starting to really throw some heat to him? And as a goaltender, how was his catcher skills?
It was great. He'd bring his goalie glove, and I had one glove and one ball, and Hazy'd bring his goalie glove, and we'd play catch at the University of Sherbrooke indoors, like in the track area. And I'm not saying Hazy could have been a catcher, but he was a great goalie.
Kirk McCaskill joins us. So you're a year in the American League. So did you have to ask the Jets, because I'm assuming, or did you only have a one-year contract? How did that work? Did you just say, hey, guys, I'm going to go try baseball? How was that discussion?
Well, they wanted me to stay in Toronto and work on my skating, which I don't blame them for. But I was pretty intent on going. So my agent just negotiated the end of the contract, and I did have a four-year deal. That was worth, you know, a substantial amount of money. And I did leave that behind to go make $800 a month playing AAA with the Angels. So there was some risk in the decision, but it all worked out.
Well, that's amazing. Obviously, you had to believe in yourself, Kurt. So now you go to the Angels training camp in 1985. And obviously, you had a good camp, because I know you went down to the minors for a bit, but you weren't down there very long. You were up in, I think it was May of 1985, so you only spent like a month in the minors.
Yeah, so I had actually, you know, an interesting story along the lines of the big league camp. When I did sign with the Angels and played rookie ball, we won the Northwest League title. Joe Madden was our manager. We had a pretty good team. And the Angels were trying to get me away from hockey, so they invited me to big league camp when I was still at the University of Vermont. And my hockey coach at the time, Jim Cross, he actually drove me home after a game, and he was a big baseball fan. He played in the Cape Cod League, and he said, "You know, you've got to go. You've done everything you can do here in college hockey. We're not going to make the playoffs, but this opportunity to go to big league camp." And at the time, you know, Reggie Jackson was there, Freddie Lynn, Rod Carew, you know, all these superstar guys. And my coach sort of recognized, like, well, that's an opportunity that might not come your way again. And so, so I did leave, and I went to my first big league camp in '83. And then spent about 2 years in the minors, and then in '85 someone got hurt. I think it was Kenny Forch. I'm not positive about that. And I had gotten off to a good start in AAA, so they gave me a shot. And my first start was against the Blue Jays, and it went okay. I took the loss. Tony Fernandez, the power hitting shortstop of the Blue Jays, hit a 3-run homer off me to drop an L on me. But I was able to stick around for 12 years after that.
Well, 12 years, man. And then your second season in 1986, you really just kind of emerged that season. You know, you were, I think, 17-10. You had over 200 strikeouts. It's so amazing to me. Like, here's a guy, you know, playing college ball, then you're in the American League. Oh, you know what? Obviously, you were a really good athlete, Kurt, and a really good pitcher. What do you feel was your best strength on the mound?
Well, I had a pretty good curveball. So, you have to have a plus pitch to get to that level, and mine was a curveball. I didn't throw very hard. I sort of had an average major league fastball. But the combination of, you know, a good curveball just made my fastball look a little bit better. And, you know, I just learned how to compete at that level. I mean, we had, I had some great mentors and, you know, Mike Witt and Don Sutton and others, who really were, you know, really helpful in sharing everything that they knew. And, you know, once I sort of figured out, you know, how to compete at that level, I was able to sort of, you know, have some consistency until some injuries set in. But, you know, I think the secret is, you know, learning out sort of mostly on the mental side, you know, how to compete at that level.
Kirk McCaskill joins us in the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame. Of course, started his career with the California Angels after being drafted by the Winnipeg Jets and playing a year in the American Hockey League. And, you know, Kirk, in 1986, we mentioned all the strikeouts. Three times in your career, you were top 10 in the league in ERA, top 10 in shutouts, and you had 2 one-hitters. Like, I can imagine striking out the sides a pretty big deal as a pitcher. You got 2 one-hitters, man. Like, did it take a while to relive that, you know, that one hitter? Like, oh man, like one hit away from a no hitter. Like, that's still pretty unreal, but a no hitter is obviously on another level. How frustrating was it, or was it just awesome to be involved in a one hitter?
Well, I have way more dubious achievements than successes. So when I get a chance to talk about a one-hitter, I appreciate it. The first one was, I think it was a third-inning home run by Steve Buchel in Texas. So believe it or not, after that game, I didn't even realize that I had thrown a one-hitter. I knew we won. The second one, I did take a no-hitter into the ninth inning against the Blue Jays. And I think it was Liriano. Is it Nelson Liriano?
Yeah, Nelson Liriano,
Yeah, he pinch hit to start the ninth off, and he hit a double in the gap, ended the no-hit bid. But we got the win there as well.
Now, so you're carrying it into the ninth inning. Is it just like we see, you know, all your teammates? Are you sitting by yourself? Or were you that superstitious guy, or would you have preferred if guys talked to you? How was it, you know, in the seventh and eighth? Because the teammates know when a guy's on a no-hitter that late in the game.
Oh, yeah. You know, they start sliding away from you. When you sit down, you get your space, and you couldn't have talked to anybody if you wanted to. You know, everybody was in on that superstition. So, nobody was gonna talk to you. And so, you know, it was fun. And I remember it like it was yesterday. Would have been nice to throw a no hitter in my career, but you know, got close.
Of course, he played for the California Angels and then the Chicago White Sox in a 12-year Major League Baseball career in the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame. Was also drafted by the Winnipeg Jets, was a Hobey Baker finalist at the University of Vermont, then played a year in the American League, and then decided, you know what, I'm going to try baseball, and clearly that was a good decision for him. Now, Kirk, did you play for the in 85 when you were in the minors? Were you at the Trappers in Edmonton?
Sure was. 84 and 85. Yep.
Okay. 2 years.
So 85, what? just for that first month or so. But 84, we won the championship. We had a really nice season.
Oh, what do you remember of old John Ducey? Was that a pitcher's park, or was it a hit? Like, it seemed pretty small. I'm assuming it's a hitter's park.
It's a hitter's park. That whole league was a hitter's park. I mean, I pitched the final game of that Pacific League championship, and our pitching coach says, I don't know how you did it. You gave up 5 miles of line drives, but you somehow won that game. That was a hitter's park, as was the whole league.
Yeah, so I'm guessing as a pitcher then, that's where you kind of maybe learn some mental toughness. Say, you know what, man, like you just kind of got to live with it, that even if you pitch some really good pitches here, it might look worse than it actually is.
Well, you know, I can remember that same pitching coach. He was a great guy, Frank Rehberger. And he had pitched in the big leagues with the Giants. But I remember him telling me one time, he said, you know, in a lot of ways, the big leagues is easier than the minor leagues. You know, you get, obviously, the lineups are deeper in the big leagues, but you've got better fielders behind you. You've got, you probably have a better catcher. You've got better umpires. You know, there's not going to be any bad hops. So, you know, that sort of, I think a lot of that was kind of tough. The minor leagues were pretty tough. Because of some of the parks and some of the other things that I just mentioned. Now that, you know, if you can get through the minor leagues and, you know, they say it's hard to get to the big leagues, it's harder to stay, and I'd say that's probably true as well.
So, Kurt, you get in now in May of 1985, and I don't think you ever went back to the minors, did you, after that?
No.
No. So that's pretty unique in itself. You know, you're 24 years of age. You play 1 year in the minors and boom, now you're a full-time major leaguer. And yet you had really, you know, your big breakout year in 1986. I think you had something like 10 complete games or something ridiculous. Like you look at pitchers then in the mid 80s, you know, when you pitch compared to now, is it better? Or do you think that, you know, the pitchers on such limited counts, like, I don't know if it's, you know, some people say it's safer or not, you know, second time through the order, we've seen all those numbers. As a guy who was on the bump for as long as you, you know, what do you think when you watch baseball today and how they handle pitchers?
Well, that part of it can get a little frustrating because, you know, we were, as starters, everybody wanted to start because, you know, you were paid, you know, by wins. And so you wanted to start and you wanted to get the win. And if you got a lot of those, you'd get more money. But, you know, watching it now, the intuition's been taken out of the game. So sometimes you see pitchers get pulled before it seems like it's necessary. But that's just the way the game goes. And, you know, I'm not going to be one of these, you know, old guys crying and screaming on the front lawn kind of thing. It's just the way it goes. The pitchers are trained differently. The communication between, you know, upper management and the dugout has increased. And so there's a lot more game planning that happens now. Whereas, you know, when I was playing, the manager was really in charge of making those decisions. He and the pitching coach and his coaches, yeah.
Kirk McCaskill joins us in Edmonton Sports Leader, TSN 1260. You know, those California Angels team, like Edmonton fans remember, like there's a lot of good young guys who came through Edmonton and then went on to star with the Angels, you know, for many years. Dee Sarcino and Tim Salmon, and, you know, you go down the list and there's lots of great baseball players who played on the opposing teams. How was, like, was the temperature in California, was that conducive? Was it better for a pitcher? Like, did it help with grip on the ball? That might seem like a stupid question, but I've always wanted to know about it. Like, was there benefits of pitching in California?
You know, at night in Anaheim, you know, you'd get a little kind of ocean air, and so the air would get a little heavy, and so it was probably more of a pitcher's park. And then in the daytime, it would completely reverse itself, and it was a hitter's park, and the ball would just fly out of there. But, you know, there were not issues with gripping the ball or anything like that. There's more issues like that, you know, along those lines in Texas and more of the hotter, humid places or in the colder places like Toronto or Edmonton where, you know, it was just hard to get a grip, hard to feel the seams.
Kirk, who...
Jason, I will tell you, going back to that 84 year when we won the championship in Edmonton, although that was a tremendous thrill, the bigger thrill was being in the Oilers locker room after the first cup. Some of the guys used to come out and take batting practice at John Ducey, and then I don't know how we got in, but a couple of us were actually in the locker room when they were celebrating their first Stanley Cup, and that was probably, in my mind, it was a way bigger thrill than winning the Pacific Coast League title.
Really? So you just obviously had made a connection with some of the players, and then you got invited in. You know, hey, the 80s were a lot different, man. Security, there was hardly any, and you probably knew someone. So, and you had played, right? So you have maybe of all the guys really understood, like, hey, man, this Wayne Gretzky guy, like, he's unreal.
Oh, yeah, I can remember going and taking the guys to the games, and I can remember distinctly, I'm like, guys, you got to be heads up when they're warming up. Pucks are flying around all over the place. You know, they come out, and if you get hit with a puck, they didn't even know what a puck was. You know, these guys from Alabama or whatever. And I remember one of our, I forget who it was, somebody got smoked by a deflected shot in warm-ups, crushed him right in the chest. But it was a lot of fun. And like I said, being in that locker room when they won their first cup was one of the coolest things I've got to experience.
Oh, I can't imagine the party of that. Like, did you go party afterwards outside the room as well?
No, they had other plans. We probably had a game the next day.
Oh, okay. That's totally fair. Now, you had made the baseball, you made the playoffs a few times in the major leagues, of course, in 86 and then again in 1993. So you had at least a celebration of your own with champagne when you clinch the division title and such like that. But when you look back on your career, Kirk, you had the 2-1 hitters, of course, but was there like an at bat with a great batter that you really recall instantly?
Well, you know, I mentioned dubious achievements before, Jason. I've got a bunch of them, but most notably, I was the pitcher that gave up the back-to-back home runs to the Griffies. So
yes.
Ken Griffey Sr. hit a home run, and then, you know, now here comes 19-year-old Junior right behind him, and he hit a home run. So back-to-back father and son home runs. Yours truly was on the mound for that.
Now, do your teammates chirp you about that after?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've coached high school baseball out here in California for a number of years, and that's all I ever hear from those guys. You know, it's ironically, ESPN and the MLB Network, they play the game, or they at least gets a lot of mention on Father's Day. So, you know, I dread Father's Day because that's when I start to hear, you know, all the chirping.
Oh, yeah. Right, well, you know what, though? You kind of got to take it. That would be a tough one, no question about it. That was in 1989 or 90, I think it was.
Yeah. I'm not embarrassed at all by it. I mean, it's a one-off. I mean, it will never happen again in the history of baseball. So I have no problem with being the pitcher for that event. The Angels won the game 7-3. I didn't get the win, but it was absolutely amazing. Unique experience.
Now, Ken Griffey Sr. was great, but Ken Griffey Jr. might have had one of the smoothest swings I've ever seen of a baseball player. How hard was he to go against on the mound as a pitcher? Like, what could you do against Griffey? Because he seemed like he could hit anything.
Yeah, he was, you know, obviously my stuff wasn't overwhelming. He probably had a field day with me, but, you know, the Hall of Fame players, they have a lot of similar characteristics, you know, and when you think about facing those guys, the one thing to me that stands out is, you know, their eyesight, the way they can, you know, make determinations on balls and strikes, and they take pitches that other guys would swing at. Now, that would allow me to compete in the at bat. But those guys, they just had this unique ability to, I think, see the ball better than everybody else.
Kurt, what was the injury in '87 that you suffered, the first one?
Yeah, it was both of my surgeries were elbow surgeries. My shoulder was a little blocky, but I got through that. But I had two elbow surgeries and some back issues along the way. But that was the first surgery was kind of a bummer because I was really getting going in my career, and I'd had a good start to that '87 season, and all of a sudden my elbow was swelling up, and so we had to go in and get some bone chips and grind down a couple of spurs, but. You know, that happens to everybody. If you're going to pitch a long time, you're probably going to get hurt.
Yeah, well, I'm assuming so for sure. Now, you know, this many years after, do you have arm or shoulder issues at all, Kirk?
Well, I'll be 60 next year. And I'm not sure I could throw any batting practice right now. But, you know, when I was coaching high school, I was, you know, pretty good. Threw a lot. So I think everything was sort of, you know, oiled up. But now that I've retired from coaching a little bit, everything's really shutting down on me. So that's kind of a bummer, but there's no reason to throw anything anymore, so it's not that bad.
And quickly, tell me, how did you find out, and, you know, pretty big honor to go into the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame. You went in the same year with Joe Carter in 2003. Who passed you the news that you were going into the Hall of Fame?
Well, that was great. Scott Crawford Scott is still there, and I was communicating with him. It was a great experience, and I was able to bring my family, including my mom and dad, who have passed. And I had friends in Toronto that I played hockey with at the University of Vermont. So it was really a great experience. Ferguson Jenkins was there. That was the first time I got to meet Fergie. And it was a really great time that myself and my family won't forget. I was able to sort of pay some homage to my dad at the same time. In my speech, you know, who's like a lifelong Canadian hockey player, like I mentioned before. So it was really a great experience, and I'm forever grateful that I was inducted into the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame.
Now, you have three sons. Were they baseball guys, or did you have them play baseball, football, hockey?
You know, my oldest son, he played some pretty serious high school baseball here in California. Did not play in college. My middle guy had no interest in it. He's much better playing the guitar, and he's a school teacher. And then my youngest guy, he graduated and went to Dartmouth College and played some baseball there. So, but you know, none of them had the passion that I had. You know, it's times have changed a little bit. There was, you know, as we always talk about, there's a lot more options for kids these days, and it's not as many who are just committed to sports like there was when I was a kid.
Now, Kirk, when you were playing Major League Baseball, of course, you played minor pro hockey. You're a pretty good player. Did you ever get to play in like any fun celebrity hockey games as a baseball guy?
Well, a couple things. One time, we have these terrible fires here in Southern California, and I forget what year it was, but there was a big fire, and the Ducks and the Kings decided to play a charity game at the pond with celebrities and athletes and all that. And there was a bunch of us that wanted to play, Mark Langston and Robin Ventura, but our teams said no. The Angels and the White Sox said that we couldn't play, couldn't risk injury. But the Blue Jays allowed Dick Schofield to play in that game, who was a shortstop for the Angels and the Jays. And he was a beginning skater hockey player. And so it was a real kick watching Scully play in that game. But they sold out the pond. They raised a lot of money for the fire victims. And then we used to go out with the Kings probably for about 5 or 6 years in a row. Tony Granato was a great guy. He would invite us up to practice with the Kings, and we'd do that once a year. So got a couple opportunities. It was really fun.
Oh, I could imagine, man. You get to kind of live out your dream of playing hockey while you're being a pro baseball player. Kirk, thanks so much.
Be on the ice with Wayne Gretzky when he was with the Kings for a lifetime.
Oh, I could imagine. Did you take like a one-timer and pretend you were Curry and bury it, or what?
I didn't want to. Kelly Rudy was the goalie. He was like, go ahead and fire them. Like the last minute, he somehow hit Kelly Rudy in the mouth with a puck. So I tried to keep everything low, Jason.
I guess it's you don't want to hurt. It's like a hockey guy comes out, he doesn't want to bean the pitcher either, so I could see that. Kurt, what an unbelievable career to be, two-sport athlete, drafted in both, play minor pro hockey, and then end up playing as long as you did, and being a really good pitcher in the major leagues of baseball for such a long time, and well-deserved honor in the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame. So much thanks for joining us today in Storytime. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, Jason, thank you for having me. Appreciate it.